It's me, M. Emmett Walsh, back at it again with a new episode of the Boy Time Podcast. And as always, I'm joined by Babby. We have a slam dunk episode, as always, really. I watched a few movies. We had April Fool's happen this week, which was funny. Personally, I liked the IGN Virtual Boy 2 trailer that they did. Thought it was pretty fun. Other than that, I feel like it was pretty slow in April Fool's stuff. I don't know. Did you see something funny?
I don't think so. I kind of hate April Fool's, so.
See, I just like it for the bits.
Most of the bits aren't good, though.
No, but sometimes, like, people on YouTube will do something funny, you know?
Yeah, every once in a while.
Yeah. I know Quentin Reviews, who we've been talking about, has been trying and failing to upload his April Fool's video, which he has been spending 2 years on. It's 13 hours long, and YouTube's not letting him post it because it's over 12 hours. So he's trying to figure that out as we speak. I don't know. It might be out by the time this podcast comes out, but as of right now, it's not out, and I don't even know what it is. All I know is that he's been working on it forever, which, you know, kudos to him. That's a lot of commitment for an April Fool's Day bit. I mean, a 13-hour bit is a lot. So, I don't know. I'm definitely interested to see what it is. But I definitely think the winner of April Fool's Day this year was Adult Swim. I don't know what they've done in the past, but this year it was all Smiling Friends related. Frankly, I should have saw that coming when they said the next season is coming out next Sunday, and I just got excited, didn't even think about the date, and then when it happened, I'm like, oh yeah, that was April Fool's Day. Or like, it was going to be midnight on Sunday, so technically April 1st. So the season didn't come out. I don't think it's on Max or anything, what they did. Which, I don't know, have you seen what they did?
Nor.
Okay.
I forgot about it.
Okay. Well, if you were watching it live on television or wherever, on wherever you get live TV, at midnight, they played the first episode of the new season of Smiling Friends. And then after that, they played three puppet remakes of three episodes from the first season of Smiling Friends. They did the Mr. Frog episode. They did the one with Shrimp and the one where he dies. And goes to hell. I watched the first one, and I'm like, oh, this isn't as funny, because, you know, I feel like the animation is kind of what makes that show funny, and when you do it in puppet form, doesn't quite hit the same, but I thought it was kind of quirky that they did it, and each episode is done, and like, I think you can tell it was like done by a different puppet studio. Where, like, the Mr. Frog one is, like, the highest quality one. Like, they kind of look Muppety. But then the second episode is the Shrimp one, and it's just, like, sock puppets. Okay, they definitely didn't really know what they were doing as much as they did with the first one. But still kind of quirked up. I did find the episode. Someone posted a Google Drive link on Twitter. And luckily, I found it. Watched the first episode. I thought it was pretty decent. I can't tell. It's like a commentary on like the video game industry, which I didn't really expect from Smiling Friends. But I guess the Mr. Frog thing is like a commentary, if you want to call it that, on like problematic celebrities or something. I don't know. But it's kind of fun because there's a lot of parallels to Banjo-Kazooie in it, and people have been pointing those out. But I think it's just more generally about any dead IP that is over 20 years old that they don't want to do anything with. A Gex would also apply. My favorite franchise is Gex. But I didn't think it was as funny as some of the stuff in the first season, but I did like it, and it was cool. But you'll have to wait if you want to watch it on Max. It's coming out on May 12th. This time, for real this time, not a fake. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. The trailer that they did for the new season, it looks interesting. Looks quirked up as ever. The animation's better, which I guess is a good and a bad thing, because some of the animation in the first season is, at times it's really good, and at times it's really bad, and I think that was nice. It just, the second season seems more smooth if, you know, the first episode is any indication of how the rest of the season is going to be, which I guess is good. I don't know. It's fine. But yeah, that was pretty much it for news this week. Just Smiling Friends stuff, which I'm looking forward to. I like the show quite a bit. Yeah, I did start watching Invincible season 2, the second half. I watched the first episode, and the animation is rough, similar to, well, actually, not similar to Smiling Friends, they did a reverse, but I think that the animators were, like, way overworked for this half season, and it kind of shows, which is unfortunate. I don't really know how to describe it, just in that, you know, I binged the first season and a half about a month ago, and then just watched the first episode of the second half of the second season, and I don't know, animations aren't as smooth. Seems to be like the mouth animations are, I don't want to say they're not synced, but I just think they aren't animating exactly to syllables. I don't really know how to describe it. It's like in like a sentence that would theoretically have like 12 frames of mouth movement to it, it does like 8 or 9, which maybe no one else notices except for me, because I don't know, I pay attention to weird stuff like that. But I don't know, not any indication of how the show is, because it's pretty good. I just need to finish it. So maybe next week I'll report on that. But I also am trying to finish The Sopranos. I'm not very close. I think I'm at the beginning of season 5. So I still have 2 seasons left. So, and I can't really talk about that on a podcast because my co-host has not seen it. Well, not all of it. Saw the first 3.5 seasons. 3.5 seasons-ish. I think maybe 3 seasons even. I don't know. I don't know where we left off.
I have no idea.
Well, we'll talk about it eventually, but I'll work on Invincible this week. But speaking of Invincible, someone that is not invincible is legendary character actor man M. Emmett Walsh. He died somewhat recently. Maybe that was not the best transition to go with, but it's just what came to mind. For some reason, basically what happened was, is that I watched the hit 1980 film Ordinary People, and I was like, I have no idea what the theme to do for this movie, because it's really sad. It's like a sappy family drama. And I was like, well, I could do family dramas that are really sad. And I'm like, well, I don't really want that to be my week. So that's out of the picture. And then I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll do more movies directed by Robert Redford. And there aren't that many. And the ones that were there weren't that interesting to me. So I was like, oh, well, I don't know what to do then. I guess I'll do a little tribute to M. Emmett Walsh, who is in the film very briefly. And I'll watch some of his movies since he recently croaked. So that's what I'm doing today. A little thing, a little M. Emmett Walsh love letter from us at the Boy Time podcast after he died. So we can't really see it. Yeah. It's very special. But I love M. Emmett Walsh. Things I've seen him in before, I've seen him in Blood Simple. I've seen him in Blade Runner. He's very briefly in Blade Runner. Kind of like the guy from Hack-O-Lantern, very briefly in Blade Runner. Which is a reference not very many people will get. But that's fine. But M. Emmett Walsh is one of those guys, like, very recognizable, and you'll, like, I guarantee you've seen him in something, because he's just one of those people that was, like, consistently working for 50 years, was still working up until, you know, he died. I think he was, like, well, he didn't die on set, but it was, like, you know, he's having movies come out now, and he's in his, like, 70s or 80s or something. I don't know. Busy guy, loved what he did, and he, you know, bless him for it. But we're talking about two movies that he's barely in. So really this whole thing is, you know, not, you know, great. Not a great love letter to M. Emmett Walsh, but I'll try to talk about him because I do like his performances quite a bit. I guess we'll start off with Ordinary People. What started this whole thing? Why did I want to watch this week? I don't really know. I just kind of decided to. I'd heard good things about it. This one's kind of hard to talk about because it's very heavy. So I guess some like content warnings are gonna be talk about suicide and not really abuse, like neglect maybe. It's a very heavy movie. And for 1980, I would say it's actually like pretty ahead of the curve in terms of like covering stuff like that. Like, yes, it is like kind of riding the coattails of the 70s, which was this super dark, depressive period in movies, especially Hollywood movies. You know, this movie was produced in the 70s, so it's still there. We haven't quite gotten to the period in Hollywood where, you know, giant blockbusters are selling everything out. We're like right about to get into it. Star Wars has come out, Jaws has come out. So like right in this period, we're in this kind of in between where it's like, okay, we have these giant blockbusters, but they're not becoming the norm. Like, we haven't gotten Indiana Jones or Ghostbusters or like all the big 80s movies, Batman. Those haven't come out yet. We're still in small independent director period, which is kind of interesting. I mean, those are my favorite types of movies. The 70s is my favorite period of Hollywood movies. And so I like this one quite a bit. But I guess to go over the story, basically it's a family drama about mostly following a younger brother whose older brother died in a tragic boat accident. and the movie takes place. I don't think it's really clear how long it's been. I think maybe a year, just to be generous. So it isn't like we're dealing with the immediate aftermath of it. It's not like, I mean, yes, it's a movie about grief, but it's not like the immediate ramifications of losing someone and all of those feelings being right there at the surface. It's been a while, and they haven't, like, moved on, but, you know, life is easier. They're able to talk and laugh and smile, even though this really sad thing happened relatively recently. But basically, everybody's had vastly different reactions to it. The mom was always kind of, she had favorites, and this older brother that died, he was the favorite, and she has been kind of closed off about everything. She wants to have a very, like, a private family life, only show others the kind of pretty side, you know, want to put up a front of a big happy family, doesn't want anyone to know anything bad that has happened, which is kind of hard because the little brother attempted to kill himself. And so, you know, word gets out about that, and she's kind of, I think it's implied that she kind of resents him for it, the kind of bringing the spotlight on the nastier side of their family or their domestic life. Maybe they aren't as happy as she wants everyone to perceive them as being. And he's still dealing with it. It's really hard on him because he was on the boat with the older brother and they were really, really close. And he kind of resents himself for surviving, for holding on to the boat. I guess spoilers. Sorry, I just spoiled the end. Whatever. But it's kind of hard to talk about this movie without going into it, because there's a lot of dynamics at play. But yes, he was on the boat. That's kind of why he tried to kill himself. He was really guilty about it, especially being the second favorite of the mom. It's like, oh, well, it's my fault if I, you know, if we both died, then, you know, she wouldn't have to live with me. It's really sad. It's a really sad movie. But the dad is kind of in this in-between where there's this tension between the mom and the younger brother. He's actively trying to repair the relationship. He's trying to keep the family together. Overall, good dad. I like him. I'm a sucker for a good dad, as we all know, in movies. Although I will say, I think the good dad is overruled by, I don't want to say a bad mom, but just a complicated mom. I saw a review on Letterboxd from one of my favorite film critics out in Chicago, Josh Larson, who said that he wished that the film showed the same sympathy towards the movie's villain as Mary Tyler Moore's performance gave. And I disagree with the notion that she is a villain. She is a very complicated person. She's probably not the best mom. And I guess if the younger brother is the protagonist, then I guess technically she's the antagonist, but she's never really doing anything to make the kid's life worse. You know, they don't have a really great relationship. They don't really talk. You can tell that the kid really wants that kind of relationship with his mom, but just isn't getting it. But it isn't like, I don't know. I don't really know how to explain it. There's a lot of stuff going on in her mind. So I don't necessarily like that label as her as the villain. I think it's just a very complicated relationship. But I think the main crux of the movie is basically the younger brothers back at school who are seeing him as he's kind of fresh out the hospital, and he's home and he's kind of like trying to get reaccustomed to whatever this new normal is going to look like without his older brother in his life. And it's hard because, you know, all of his friends, they were his brother's friends. They were kind of this group where both the older and the younger brother were in this friend group together. And now it's just kind of weird. And it's kind of, it hurts him to be around these people because, well, it's just weird. It reminds him of his older brother and that guilt that he associates with it. So he's kind of alone, forces himself to be alone, and it's hard. And he's on the swim team with the head coach played by M. Emmett Walsh, who's very good. He's very good in the role as swim coach. He's barely in it. He goes to a couple swim practices before deciding to quit. And yeah, those are pretty much all the scenes with M. Emmett Walsh. But he's really good. He's playing this swim coach. He's kind of a little bit of a doofus. Not very emotionally mature guy where, you know, this kid just got out of the hospital for trying to kill himself. And like on one of the first swim practices back, he's like, did they hook you up to electricity to get that depression out of your brain? And the kid's like, yeah. And he's like, oh, I wouldn't let him do that. I'm like, that's just not something you say to someone who just got out of the hospital for trying to kill themselves. Don't make them feel bad for the medical procedure that was done to them. So, you know, not the greatest guy. And he kind of tries to guilt him. He's like, oh, you know, I really worked hard for you to stay on the swim team. And if you quit now, I'm not going to get you back on. And the kid's like, okay, yeah, fine, whatever. I don't want to be on the swim team anymore. So M. Emmett Walsh, not a great guy in this movie, but a good performance, I think, as not a good guy. He's the real villain. If anyone's the villain, it's M. Emmett Walsh as the swim coach, I guess. That's the closest thing this movie has to an actual villain. Because I don't think the mom is really a villain. But, yeah, I think a lot of the appeal to this movie is the relationship between the kid and his therapist, played by Judd Hirsch. Who is absolutely phenomenal in this movie. One of my favorite movies of all time is Good Will Hunting. And I think that movie could have easily have been influenced by this one. Just in that, like, the therapist is kind of speaks to him plainly. I don't want to say that they're, like, friends. Well, actually, they are friends. They kind of develop this kind of relationship over the course of the movie. Kind of like the biggest relationship in this movie. But, yeah, I think that all of the therapy scenes were really well done. Really well paced out. Just in, like, you know, I think therapy scenes, they can be tough. And that's something I've noticed about The Sopranos as it keeps going, is that the therapy scenes, there's less and less of them as the seasons go. And I think they can be hard to kind of script out and plan for them, because essentially it is like a time in the story where everything stops, the plot stops, and now it's like, okay, well, now we just have to reflect over something that just happened. And sometimes that can feel a little inauthentic. It feels fake. It's like, oh, well, we need the main character to understand something that happened or change his views for this next scene to play out. So we'll just you know, throw in a therapy scene. I'm not accusing either The Sopranos or this movie of doing that. I'm just saying that is a folly that some screenwriters can fall into, of just lazy screenwriting. But I think in Ordinary People, I think it's very well done, and that it's kind of like drip fed, and that the kid doesn't want to talk. It isn't just like he sits on a couch and just, this is how I'm feeling right now. This is how I'm feeling about the scene that just happened and two scenes ago and how my mom is. It isn't really like that, because the kid is putting up some kind of fronts like his mom does. So there's just this really interesting dynamic. And as their relationship gets better and better, that's when we as the audience get some information, and he obviously makes some revelations. And it's really well done. So that's probably as much as I want to talk about it, just because I don't want to spoil the whole thing. But I would highly recommend it. It is on Max, so check it out and rate it 5 stars on Letterboxd. I didn't, but I think you should, you being the greater audience. So there you go. That's the first movie that starred Emmett Walsh in it. And the second movie that stars Emmett Walsh is The Iron Giant. I didn't know that he was in this movie. and this is a movie I've seen once back in high school. And I remember liking it, and I'm like, I should probably revisit it, because it's by one of my favorite directors in the animated scene, Brad Bird, who has done such things like The Incredibles and Ratatouille, probably two of the best Pixar movies, just in general, I think. I don't think anyone's disputing that. I didn't know he did Ratatouille until recently, but The Iron Giant is kind of the first in his unofficial animated trilogy, those being The Iron Giant, Incredibles, and Ratatouille. I guess Incredibles 2 is just not included. I guess that one did come out like 10 years after Ratatouille, but it's kind of interesting, you know? Because I think he started as an animator for Disney, did stuff on like Fox and the Hound and The Black Cauldron, and then eventually, I guess somehow he got into directing, made The Iron Giant, which is not a Disney movie, I don't think. Frankly, I don't know what studio made it. It's on Paramount Plus, so maybe it's a Paramount movie, or maybe they just bought it, I don't know. And then eventually went back to Pixar, and he's been at Pixar ever since. He's been like senior creative leading like most of the Pixar movies that have come out recently. Just hasn't directed anything, which is a shame. But Iron Giant, I don't really know how much I need to say about this movie, because I think it's one of those that most people know, especially our generation of people that grew up in the 2000s. This movie was kind of made for us. So it was made in an interesting period, kind of like Ordinary People, where, you know, traditional animation was going the way of the dodo, and that most studios were switching over or about to switch over. Disney was just starting to like, I don't want to say sabotage, but sabotage their traditionally animated department. DreamWorks was starting to switch over. The writing was on the wall. The traditional animation was dead. And meanwhile, The Iron Giant came out. And arguably, I'll say it, one of the best animated movies of all time. This thing slapped so hard. I think it's really interesting in that it came out, I think, I want to say it came out in like 1999. I don't know if that is, it did come out in 1999. It kind of has like an anti-American military message to it, which is interesting for the time. I guess it probably, this was before 9/11, so that might have changed if this movie came out just a couple years after. But it's really interesting in that it makes kind of makes the same argument that something like Arrival makes, and that like most humans, especially those in power, would much rather shoot something down rather than ask questions about it. Something could, like an alien could be completely benevolent, like the Iron Giant is. And meanwhile, the military's like, oh, well, it could be Russian, it could, well, I mean, this movie takes place in the Cold War, so of course, like, it could be Russian, it could be Chinese, or it could be from Mars. Either way, we need to blow it up and kill it. And meanwhile, the Iron Giant just wants to run around and cannonball in a pool, save some kids from dying. He's a superhero. I can't really... There's not a whole lot to say about the Iron Giant. It kind of speaks for itself. It's really short. It's an hour and 25. There's no fat on it at all. I will say the animation is worse than I remembered at parts. And maybe that's just the art direction. Didn't feel as like shaded as I remember, especially in the beginning. There's a scene where the main kid goes to the diner where his mom works, and like there's like no lighting on anyone's face. Granted, I don't know what the budget of this movie is, but it seemed like a TV show that would have came out around the same time, like a Kim Possible or something. So I don't know. The rest of it is actually really good. It's just like in the beginning, I was like, oh, this is rougher than I imagined. But it is kind of interesting in that this movie came out, as I was saying, at this intersection of what mainstream animation was doing. They are doing the thing where it's like mixing 2D and 3D animation, which Disney was also doing at this time, with movies like Tarzan and Treasure Planet, Brother Bear, maybe. I don't know. I don't know if that one does 2D and 3D. I just know Tarzan and Treasure Planet did. Which, shout out to Bread Sword, has a great video on the production of Treasure Planet. Goes into all that stuff, all the details of the types of animation used. Doesn't have one about the Iron Giant, though, so why should I care? But I do think it is one of those movies that I think everybody should see. I know that there is kind of a stigma about animated movies being just for kids. But this is one of those that's like, this is for everybody. I think there's something that, you know, everybody is going to take away from this movie. And, you know, I've been just such a sucker for these types of movies for a while. Especially recently, you know, I've been on my Ghibli kick, and this kind of fits that void too, where it's like, we gotta be kind. Kindness is a strength, and it's just nice to see, you know, because the world is rarely ever like that. So it's nice to go to like a fantasy world where people are nice to each other, and it's like the normal. And who knows, maybe it will be like that someday, but yeah, it's just kind of nice to see in a movie. So I recommend seeing it. If you've somehow not seen The Iron Giant, fix that sooner rather than later, because it's a classic. So that's it. And also The Iron Giant is voiced by Vin Diesel. just something fun. I didn't know. He is played two anthropomorphic aliens.
Both have made a really good song.
I guess you could say that. He made, doesn't he have a few songs? Old Vinny D.
He should go by Vinny D.
He should. He has two songs that came out in 2020. Feel Like I Do and Days Are Gone. Awful. Man, the fans. The cover is so weird. Fans also like Dwayne Johnson, Jeremy Renner, Will Smith, Shaq, and Idris Elba.
Oh.
People who like Vin Diesel just like actors who make
every music. Other actor.
Well, Shaq's not an actor, but you know what I mean. Celebrities that make music. Also,
he wasn't in Shazam, so.
Well, that's true. He was in Shazam. And Diesel. Is that what that movie's called? Steel. Steel is Diesel's what his DJ name is. Steel is his superhero movie that came out around the same time as Shazam. Or is it Kazam? I don't remember. It's one of them. One of them is a Mandela effect, and it's played by Ice-T. So that's it for me. I just watched those two movies. Oh, Emmett Walsh in The Iron Giant is a crazy steamboat captain who at the very beginning of the movie sees the Iron Giant crash land into the planet. And he's like the old town crazy guy who's like, I saw an alien. You guys don't believe me. I saw an alien. You know, that guy. There's a guy like that in Gravity Falls. The old prospector guy. He plays that character in The Iron Giant. So, again, barely in it. Frankly, if I was going to do an Emmett Walsh love letter, I should have done Blood Simple. But I just watched that like a couple months ago. Frankly, didn't really like it all that much. But he is really good in it. So, yeah. Thank you, M. Emmett Walsh. We appreciate your sacrifice to the service. Thank you for your service, M. Emmett Walsh. And now, on to Babby for his segment of the show.
Moment of silence. The moment's over. Okay. a variety of things to talk about this week, as always.
Oh.
Where will we start? I guess we'll start with singles since I have one single. Cavalier, new single. I think this is like the third that he's dropped. First one on Spotify, though. The other ones are just YouTube only. I don't know what this new trend is like dropping your singles on YouTube only, but people have been doing it a lot this year, and I don't really like it. Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, Playboi Carti's been doing that with like five songs, and I don't know. Weird stuff going on. This one was Custard Spoon. 2 minutes. Pretty simple. It's good. I enjoy it. I'm excited to, like, just get into the record finally. I feel like this thing has been teased since January, and I'm just ready for it. We do have the release date, so it's coming out in 2 weeks, the 19th. So we'll be doing a review of that one for sure. I think the vinyl, not even a vinyl pre-order. The vinyl's just out. You can buy it. And it'll get there before the album's out. The issue is it's $70, so I'm not buying it.
Oh.
If it was $40, I'd buy it. It looks like it's a 2 LP as well, so I think it's going to be a pretty hefty album. A couple features on there. I know Quelle Chris is doing a lot of production stuff. But I am excited for it. It'll be his Backwoods Studios debut, which is interesting because there's not really a lot of Backwoods people featured on it. Usually Billy Woods at least will hop on. One track, unless there's some hidden features or something I don't know about. But excited for that. I'm excited in just like the kind of newish wave of underground artists in the rap area that I've been getting into a little bit. It's nice to mix it up a little bit. Yeah, excited for that. I'll be definitely talking about that record when it comes out soon. All right, we got albums upon albums to talk about.
Oh boy.
I guess we'll go in order in the way I listened. We'll start with this new Luca and Real Bad Man album. I've been talking about this thing for a little bit. We had one single, The Initiate's Peace with Billy Woods. That song is really, really, really good. One of my favorites of the year. The full album dropped. It's 15 songs, hour long. And it's pretty solid. It's not anything too crazy. I don't want to say it's overwhelming or underwhelming just because it is a little bit different than I was expecting it to be based off of that single. But I think the production here is probably the highlight. Real Bad Man, I've heard a couple of his records with Bully James and a couple of other loose things. I do really enjoy his production style. I feel like the one he did two with Bully James, but the most recent one definitely felt like a 60s Italian mafia piece, which was really cool. He does really nice cinematic, warm analog sounding beats. But this one takes a lot of kind of African inspiration, African woodwinds, and makes a really nice warm palette. A lot of jazz in here as well. The album is Temple Needs Water, Village Needs Peace. It's very solid. There's definitely an issue of it being too long just because a lot of these songs do kind of sound the same, which is a little bit of a downside to it. I do think Luca is pretty decent. I think he does kind of fall into limitations when it comes to his rapping ability, especially when a lot of these songs are in the 4-minute realm, which with hip-hop songs you don't really usually get that a lot anymore because the third verse isn't really a thing that is too popular anymore. Yeah. But he's got a lot of verses on this thing. The content is great. I really do enjoy the subject matter. Kind of similar to Aethiop's in the way that it does take this kind of African-centric approach to different issues. And this one definitely shines a lot more of like a nature-rooted kind of homey vibe to it, which I really enjoy. But still tackles the same kind of issues that Aethiop's tackles with neocolonialism, all that kind of stuff. So that comes across pretty well. I think the main issue with this album is like Luca is not dynamic enough in his verses to make you interested for an hour. Like the beats definitely keep me here because they are interesting and really, really nice to listen to. And he lets the beats breathe quite a bit. I don't remember what song it was. I think it's The Shamans, where you really get like a 2-minute instrumental build, which is really cool. I think his verses do get a little stale. I think especially you hear it especially on the track with Billy Woods because you get to see how dynamic his rhyme schemes are and the different pockets he goes in. And then you get to Luca and it's kind of AABB kind of rhyme schemes where it is very like, rhyme this with this, same amount of syllables, same everything. It gets a little stale and becomes a little bit one note, which is unfortunate, but I think there's definitely room to build for him here. But yeah, overall, I still definitely recommend this record. If you're into the more conscious hip hop area, this will definitely be worth your time, I think. While the rapping does fall a little bit short at times, I think the overall vibe of the instrumental palette that Real Bad Man did here is pretty good. It's still one of the more interesting listens you'll get this year. And Luca is still pretty underground at this point. So I do like finding artists that are definitely less popular. And it's always fun. It's always a little bit more of a personal experience because there is, I don't know. I always enjoy finding new underground artists. So definitely check it out. I think the Initiate's Peace is the best track here, but I also really enjoy The Farmer. I think that's my second favorite track on this record. But yeah, that was the first one. Next, we'll stay in hip-hop. I did not know this record was coming out, but we got a new Rock Marciano album, Marciology. It's weird. This album cover reads 2014, and the music reads 2014, but it is new, and it is really great. I don't know if he was hyping this thing up or doing any kind of promo for it, or if this was kind of like a, here's an album in a week, I'm not sure, but, it's very good. It is 14 tracks, 45 minutes, Got a mix of production on here from Alchemist and Rock Marciano and Animos. Beats are fantastic. Rapping is great. I think this album is a lot more dynamic, actually, than The Elephant Man's Bones, which was the Alchemist collab from 22. I think that record is still really good, but I think I love Alchemist, but I feel like the instrumental palette gets a little bit stale on that record. I think it falls a little bit too, it's too chill. There's not enough of like a flair going on in that record at all times. Maybe it's just because I haven't listened to it in a while. It is really good. But yeah, the nitpicky thing is it gets a little bit stale. This one, I really like how many different lanes he goes into. And some really good features on here as well. We have Larry June and Crime Apple, Flea Lord, Jay Worthy, Knowledge the Pirate, which I haven't heard in a couple of years. But yeah, when Luco's a little bit stale, Marciano came in and he is one of the most, like, the way he raps is like, he sounds like he's uninterested and that he doesn't like rapping, but in the coolest way you can imagine, which is really strange. I don't know. He's got such a smooth, nice kind of like griminess to his vocals that I really enjoy. The lyricism is fun. It's great. It's varied. Beats across this thing is fantastic. Kind of drumless, but not too far into that abstract lane. But I think something like La Flair, I think, is the song. That beat is like really, really cool. I don't know what that sample is. Almost sounds like the, like when you play a game and you go into like the shop or the supermarket and the music they play in there is kind of what that sounds like. It's really weird, but I really enjoy it. Goyard God is one of my favorites as well. The beat on that one is crazy. The use of the sample on that is fantastic. Larry June on Bad Juju is fantastic. I think that song works really well as well. Yeah, fantastic Alchemist beat on this one. Yeah, it's a really great record. I don't have too much to say about it. I haven't like dug into lyrics or anything because I feel like Rock Marciano is the perfect blend of like really nice lyricism, but also just like the vibes are really nice and you get that really nice kind of vinyl analog-ish feeling to the music, which I really enjoy. So I think this is probably the best top hip-hop record to come out this year. I think I rated this one the highest out of all of them that have come out. But yeah, incredibly solid. Didn't even know it was coming out, and now it's probably my favorites, one of my favorites of the year. So check it out. I need to return to The Elephant Man's Bones because I feel like giving that a second listen will be beneficial to me. I did really like that record, but I'm interested to see how it compares to this one. But yeah, I think that's it from the hip-hop realm this week. What do we got next? Okay, this is interesting because I literally did the same bit last week and we're doing it again. There is a new Riot album. Last week we did the Jesus and Mary Chain record, which is a band from the 80s and 90s who have returned to make a new record. Now Riot has released a new record, Riot being one of the kind of pillars of shoegaze when it first became a genre. And I think Nowhere, that their first album is kind of like in that trio with Souvlaki and Loveless as like the essential shoegaze records. So they're back with a new record, Interplay. It's definitely not really shoegaze. I think it definitely goes a lot more into the alternative rock area with a little bit of still like dream pop, a little bit of shoegaze elements in it. But it is 12 songs, an hour. A lot of the albums this week were long. It's decent. It definitely caught me by surprise because of how lively it sounded. I went into it expecting another like Jesus and Mary Chain situation, where it's just like, oh, this is not nearly as good as like, you know, you can tell it's a band that's been around for like 40 plus years.
Yeah.
This one felt a little bit more natural. It gave me a little bit more of the slow dive kind of like, oh, a little bit of reinvention. It still feels like it's a natural progression of their sound. I did not know what their sound was before this record. But going into it, it was like, It was pretty good. I think the production and the way the songs flowed were really nice. I think Peace Sign is really great. It definitely falls more into like mainstream alt rock area, which is a good and bad thing because you do get some really nice, easy listening jams on here. But at the same time, it does get a little generic on a couple of these tracks. But they do mix it up. Like Light in a Quiet Room is great. I Came to See the Wreck is also great. Those are ones that are a lot more long form, more atmospheric, and play more to like the dream pop elements, which is really nice. But I think Portland Rocks is probably the best song on here. The energy on that one is just great. Again, it falls a little bit into like almost generic category, but it does enough where it's like, I really dig this still. So it's solid. I like it a lot more than the Jesus and Mary Chain record that came out. I think this is a better evolution of their sound. But the same thing as I did with Jesus and Mary Chain, I'm like, all right, I got to listen to a record from them in their prime to like know what they sound like. Sure. Because I have not checked out Ride yet. I was going to do Nowhere. I think Nowhere might be on my wheel somewhere. At least it was a while ago. But I decided not to do Nowhere because I wanted to do Going Blank again. This was purely based off of album covers, and this one looked funky, and I'm like, I kind of want that. Because Nowhere seems very... It's still very me-coded, but it feels a little bit more gloomy, and I wanted something a little bit bright. Maybe the record doesn't sound like that, but based off the covers, I'm like, I want the guy with the funny cucumber slices on his eyes. So went into that one, and it is fantastic. It is so bright and energetic and electric, and so much fun too. It was really, really great experience. I think when it comes to these kind of pillars of shoegaze, this definitely leans into the like more rock area of it. I feel like Slow Dive definitely plays more to the dream pop area of shoegaze, and then Loveless is kind of like the blend of the two. But this one's definitely like alt rock forward. And I think it works really great because you get some really fantastic like sound of that shoegaze sound of just like really filtered guitars and noise and the filling of the mix. But you also get these song structures that feel like something that Radiohead would do on OK Computer, and something that even like Blur would be working on. You get this nice little blend of like what UK rock music was doing at the time, but you have this like shoegaze twist to it that is really nice. I think Leave Them All Behind, the opener, is pretty perfect. Great energy, but it also like, you get these kind of like longer instrumental sections of just this shoegaze build. It's just really fun. It's out of the Souvlaki and Loveless, I think this is definitely the brightest and most like, I don't know, kind of accessible, I think, in a way. Just because like the energy here, if like if you enjoy rock music, it'll be so easy to go over into this area. Twisterella, the second track, is also phenomenal. The guitar tones on this are great. They're bright. They're sunny. Interesting thing with Ride is like all the stuff on their Spotify are like the expanded editions only. You can't get just like the OG album anymore. So there's like four extra tracks on like all of these. But I think Mousetrap might be my favorite. I don't know. Something about that one is like, again, incredibly sunny. The energy. I don't know, something about those guitars and the higher pitch just work really well. It has kind of like this almost like theme park fun energy to it. I don't know how to describe it, but I don't know. There's a definite like feeling of roller coaster going up and down with this track that's really fantastic. But they do still have these moments where it is like more in that shoegaze ambient kind of weird like atmospheric areas. I think the closer especially does that, and it does it well. So yeah, it's a really great record. I'll probably get to Nowhere eventually. I don't know if we need to do another channel or not, but Going Blank Again is really great. I think I liked it more than the Jesus and Mary Chain record, the old one that I listened to. But yeah, I've been going back to this thing a lot. I feel like it's kind of a little bit of addicting, which is what I've been wanting. I wanted something that I return to a lot. I think the replayability on this record is really good. So that's my exploration into Ride. I'll probably go a little bit deeper into them eventually. I just think it's funny that all of these like shoegaze and pre-shoegaze bands are like, wait a minute, this genre is getting popular again. Time for us to release music. Because we've gotten a Slow Dive record, a Jesus and Mary Chain record, and a Ride record all within the last year. So, My Bloody Valentine, it's your turn. I feel like they said they were going to do something, but they said that like every year and nothing ever happens. So their last record was 2013. So I do hope they come back though, because those two records are phenomenal. All right. A couple more. What do we got next? Yeah, Beyonce. I think that's the last one I have. Cowboy Carter. I think this is Act Two in the Renaissance Trilogy. I don't know if it's called the Renaissance Trilogy, but that's what I'm calling it. It makes the most sense to me. Renaissance came out in 2022. I thought that record was fantastic. I love the exploration into the multiple different phases of pop music and house and dance. In those kind of areas, you can get to explore like all the different decades of pop music. I think it was really great. A couple of the songs in there are still stuck in my head. I think Plastic Off the Sofa and Virgo's Groove are just fantastic. But Renaissance was Act One and Cowboy Carter is Act Two. This is the country, I put country in air quotes, record. I feel like it's more of like an homage, again, like Renaissance, it's like an homage and kind of history lesson in the genre and kind of associating genres around it. I wouldn't say this is a purely country record. I feel like that's not fair to say. But I think there's a wide range of like new country sounding songs, very old country sounding songs, and a lot of things that kind of, I'd call it a country fusion record. It's pretty good. I really, really, really respect Beyonce's album creation and thought process. I think she is one of the best when it comes to coming up with a concept and executing it in a way that's not too heady. I think she did that well on Lemonade. I think Renaissance also showed that really well and being like a kind of time capsule, but at the same time being really fun and easy to get into and enjoyable. And this is no different. I'm not really a fan of country music. Sure, I'll get into some of the, like old school outlaw country stuff, but I never go out of my way to like actually listen to it. But I think a lot of the tracks here do go over pretty well. I mean, her vocals are great and I feel like she fits the genre really, really nicely. It feels so natural. But American Requiem as an opener is really great. Blackbird on the second track. Blackbird is a cover of Beatles Blackbird, which is interesting. I did not expect covers on this record, but there are two of them at least.
I know about the big one.
Yes. But the Blackbird cover is actually really fantastic. And it's interesting because it does go pretty, I think putting it on this record is really good because it is featuring four other black country artists. And Blackbird originally being about civil rights and segregation in the South. I think that's where Paul McCartney was at when he was writing it. And just having like this updated version of like Beyonce making a country record and having four black country artists on this track, I think carries over really, really, really well. Again, her attention to detail when she's putting together these things, you can tell she has like a great appreciation and love for the genres that she's doing on here. And she pulls them off pretty well. So that song went over pretty well. I'm not going to talk about every track because there's 27 of them, which is crazy. It's definitely a haul to get through. It's still enjoyable, but like for someone not being into country, listening to an hour and 20 of it was like a little bit, I had to split it into two parts, which was fine. There are like definitely a lot of like little interludes and skits. I think Willie Nelson is on here like 3 times. He does like, a little like radio show or whatever on it.
Like Jim Carrey.
Of course. You gotta do that. Texas Hold'em's pretty good too. I think that was one of the singles for this thing. Fun. It's hard to talk about because I don't know too much about the genre. So I don't really know a lot of comparisons or anything. But a lot of it is done just like really tastefully. Like nothing feels out of place or like, why did you do that? Obviously we have the Dolly Parton kind of like intro, and then you have a Jolene cover. I think the Jolene cover is really good. I think it's really fantastic. I feel like Jolene is one of the most covered songs of all time.
Yeah, probably.
And there are a lot of good covers of it. I think Miley Cyrus has one as well. That's really good. I think that's the person I'm thinking of that has one. But that one's really good. Spaghetti. Fantastic. I love the little spaghetti Western nod. But yeah, kind of a banger. This is where like you get this country fusion where it's like more of a hip hop song, but just like kind of blending country into it in a way that doesn't suck, which is really hard to do. I'm surprised Lil Nas X wasn't on this record, to be honest, because I feel like he would kind of fit into this style of track.
True.
I'm not mad that he's not. I feel like he's definitely taking a different direction with his sound.
Yeah.
Which is fine. So, Alligator Tears is also one of my favorites. Then we have a run here where we have Just for Fun that has a... we have Willie Nelson on Smoke Hour 2, and then we have Willie Jones on the feature for Just for Fun, which is pretty nice, kind of slower country ballad. We have Most Wanted with Miley Cyrus. I think Miley Cyrus does really well on this. They're a pretty good combo. I was not sure how that was going to work at all, but I think it does pretty well. Then we have Levi's Jeans with Post Malone. I think Post Malone has the worst feature on this record. And that's I don't think it's his fault. I don't think it's his fault, actually.
Okay.
I think his vocals got mixed in a really weird way that did not help him. There's like so many filters on him that I could like not tell it was him until he started doing like his vibrato thing that he always does. I don't know. It's like robotic Post Malone. I can't tell. There's so many vocal filters to like clean up his voice. I'm like, no, I like Post Malone the best when there's no filters or anything on his vocals.
Yeah.
So it was a little weird. I think it's still a kind of like fun tongue-in-cheek duet that they're doing. I just wish that Post Malone's vocals would have been better placed in that track. Yeah, is pretty good. Another banger. This record definitely goes more into like harder banger territory later as it goes. But again, I think like the kind of square dance mixed with like hip hop trap banger, I think is really fun and a great idea. Riverdance is another one of my favorites. Again, not much to say about it, but I enjoy it. It's a pretty good record overall. I really do respect her craft. Even if like this album, I probably won't return to at all. That's one of those where it's like, this was a really nice listen and I really enjoyed it, but it's still not for me. I don't think I'm going to put on a Beyonce country album just in my spare time. I was definitely a lot like more likely to do that with Renaissance. Just, I do enjoy kind of the dance scene more. But still a record I really respect. I think it was a really cool move for her to go this way. And I'm interested to see how she closes out this trilogy or what genre she could kind of go into next, because these genre fusion areas have been really working for her. And I still think Renaissance is probably my favorite out of hers. I really respect Lemonade as well. But I feel like, I don't know, something about Renaissance is just really fun. I don't know where she's going to go from here. It's gonna be interesting. I feel like she go in a couple different areas. I don't know. I don't really want a rock record. I feel like that's gonna be a little weird. Yeah. I think she could do it. I think she has the vocals to pretty much do anything.
Oh yeah.
I think she's one of the most talented vocalists probably ever. just in the way that she can morph and bend to like so many different styles of music. But I don't know. I don't know if I want to rock one. She could just do like a old school, like 50s and 60s soul. I feel like going through like the history of soul would be really fun. Yeah. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. But yeah, very good. I enjoyed that quite a bit. I didn't talk about, okay, there was two more records that dropped this week. I did not listen to either of them for different reasons. We have Cemetery's new album, Bloody Angel. We're going to be doing that on the channel this year. So we'll save our thoughts for that. It's getting pretty good reviews too. So,
oh, good.
I'm excited. I'm very excited. It's an hour long. So, yeah, hopefully the wheel blesses me with that soon. Cause I've been missing Cemetery, to be honest. Something about it drags me back. I don't know if it's just because of how stupid it is. I don't know. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I don't get it. The other album that dropped this week, was the Machine Gun Kelly and Trippy Red collab album called Genre Sad Boy.
Oh.
With the worst cover I've ever seen in my life. This looks like a Tumblr post.
I don't know if this is worse than the Pink Tomatoes one he did.
I think it is.
I don't know. That one sucks.
Although that is really bad. yeah, I don't know. This felt like an April Fool's joke, but it wasn't. Definitely not going to listen to this. I don't think you could pay me to listen to this. Although it's only 27 minutes. You could pay me to listen to this. but this is just one of those, like, why does this exist? / who is this for? Yeah. The funny thing is he was beefing with one of the producers on the record on Twitter, and that like became the promo for the record.
Awesome.
Because the producer sent him beats and then did not realize that like this is the album that it was going on. So the producer was like making fun of the cover and the album. And it was just a fight over it. I'm like, this is the best promo you could do for an album like this. Yeah, just one of those things where it's like this will be forgotten forever, but it's just a funny little like collab album that probably shouldn't ever exist. But yeah, that's a thing.
Why is Trippy collabing with MGK?
Yeah, that's the weird part. It's like I feel like you guys have never done anything together. It's like I feel like these don't blend together that well. I don't know.
And Trippy's like so big.
Yeah, I mean MGK is pretty big too. But I guess they both fall into like that emo. Yeah.
Wow.
I think he got more popular as he went into like the fake punk area that he went. Oh, he was sad. Very like less popular as a rapper.
But he beefed with Eminem.
Eminem. There should be an MGK Eminem collab record.
I don't think that's gonna happen. His beard is weird. No.
Your beard is weird.
Yeah,
I feel like the Eminem beef was definitely a huge booster for him.
Oh, absolutely.
And the fact that it got him to leave hip-hop altogether and make two really bad, like, pop-punk records.
Yeah, that's true.
Which turned out to be a win, so I don't know. He may have got roasted by Eminem quite a bit, but he definitely made a lot of money off of it.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm who's sure. The real winner there?
Well, I think Eminem got some money out of that, too. I don't know.
Yeah, but, you know.
So the most relevant Eminem has been in, like, 10 years.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah. I think that's it. I don't know if there was any other news or anything that happened this week with records. Every time everyone comes around, everybody's like, Frank Ocean dropped, and it's, like, kind of lost its funniness after that. Seventh year. Now it's just sad.
Now it's sad.
Yeah. But I don't think there's any other news going on. I think this was the last kind of big week for a while. I think April 19th is going to be a little bit of a bigger week.
Yeah.
Also because the Taylor Swift album is coming out, and I'm sure some other things will pop up that'll be coming out then. Still don't have a release date to this Charlie album or Porter Robinson yet. I'm sure those will come soon.
Yeah.
Apparently the Lemon Twigs are making another new record out May 3rd. I do have the last year's Lemon Twigs record on the wheel because I think that's one that we're both going to really enjoy.
Okay.
Single-handedly reviving soft rock by themselves because nobody else is making soft rock. So.
I love soft rock.
See how that is. Exactly. Yeah. I think that's it.
That's it?
I think so.
I did listen to the new Porter Robinson song and I loved it. Great. I thought it was great.
I think it's also great. I listened to it a couple more times and it's stuck in my head now.
I know. So. It's kind of like, I don't know. It isn't like plastic pop, but it does have, it skews more that direction than something off of Nurture. But I don't know. I still like it. Usually that would make me roll my eyes and lose interest. But
exactly. I think that's like how I was feeling the first time I listened to it. And then I listened to it again. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. I watched the music video too, and maybe that's a part of it. But
yeah, I think that was my mistake because I watched the music video. Wow. Like, this is way too, like, anime coded.
It is a little anime coded, but I don't know. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll definitely do that record on the channel.
Oh, absolutely. Get Bab Jam on the channel. On my
page, so, yeah.
Which we just had him on the channel.
We did just have him on the channel. We'll have him on again soon, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we just did our Adrian Lenker reaction, so check that out.
Absolutely.
That album is fantastic.
I'm playing it all the time.
Maybe the best album this year. Who knows?
Who knows?
Pretty high up there.
I would say so.
Yeah, the replayability on it has been really fantastic. I've been listening to it over and over again.
Yes.
But, yeah, check that out. I feel like everybody that listens to this probably has already, but do it if you haven't. Got a retrospective this week. We got a lot of stuff to talk about on there. So.
Yeah, that's what I've been listening to. Trying to prepare.
Prepare.
I think The Cure is better than I remembered. Other than that, I feel like it's been a pretty positive batch. Not as good as the last one, but pretty positive, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the last one was just full of classics.
Yeah. Well, I have two 100 out of 100s in this recap, so.
Oh. Oh, yeah. I was going to say, which one? So I go, yeah, I already know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have rainbows in this one, too, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We do have rainbows. Yeah, technically. Yeah. It is a big spread because we took that break in January. So it's like the first thing we're talking about is Helplessness Blues, which we reacted to on October 20th. So like 6 months ago.
Yeah, like Sampa's in here too, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
It's a big spread. It's a lot to get caught up on because it's like 14 records.
Mm-hmm.
But.
And we have to talk about New Order.
That's true.
So.
That's true. I should probably listen to that whole record again. I was listening to the songs that I had on the winning playlist, but I should probably just listen to the whole record if we're going to talk about it more in-depth than usual.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's it in terms of stuff. Lizzie McAlpine's record is coming out this week. I am looking forward to it. We'll see.
Are we doing that next week?
Yeah. I think so. I think that'll be my pick. I don't know if I'll look at reviews or anything, but
I mean, if the singles are good, then I think we should be decent.
The single I've heard, there's two singles out.
Okay.
But Older is maybe one of her best songs, in my opinion.
Okay.
So I'll go out and say it. But yeah, I don't know. She scratches this very specific itch for me, which I know might be a little bit bland to some people, but I do like it quite a bit. So I'm looking forward to it. Other than that, I don't think I have any music stuff.
Sick.
Just been listening to a lot of Adrian Lenker.
I tell you.
That's really all I've been doing. But, yeah. I don't know. We need to figure out what our next Boy Time Presents is going to be.
Yes.
I feel like it's been a minute.
Thinking Baldur's Gate.
Ah, Baldur's Gate.
I'm almost done with it. So I feel like in a few weeks we'd be able to
okay.
To talk about it.
Yeah, we can do that. I am in, well, not to brag, I'm in the top 1% of all players because I've beaten Honor Mode.
It's true.
It's true. I have the gold dice.
I have no honor.
Well.
I just have silly blue dice.
I don't recommend anyone play on honor mode.
God, no.
It's
the amount of hours it's taking me just to beat the game on like normal mode is crazy.
Yeah.
It never ends.
No, it never ends. And I will say, here's the thing about honor mode, and maybe this is something more to talk about when we do a deep dive into it, is that it has completely killed my interest in the role-playing aspect of the game. Because yeah. When you're playing it on honor mode, it is so much like, okay, the story comes second. You're trying to game the game. You're trying to like meta it.
Yeah, it's like Dark Souls.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to go hard and min-max everything, get all of the bonuses you can. Whereas when you're playing it normally, that's not how you're thinking of things.
Yeah, I think even just doing our multiplayer, like, game that we're doing, it's like, that's just messing around and not role-playing at all.
No. No, not really. We
have had, like, 0 bits of story in that playthrough.
No story, we're just killing everybody, you know? We killed Lazelle for a bit. And her body has just followed us through all of just our camps. I don't know why it's still there.
Yeah. That'll be a good feature.
I think so. I didn't think about that. But yeah. I feel like
3 is massive. I just started it. But, I mean, hopefully in a couple of weeks we'll be able to do that.
Act 3 is, I will say it's probably the shortest.
Okay,
there's good. If you're gunning for the final thing, which you probably shouldn't do.
It feels massive.
Well, yes, it does. I think
it's just because of, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll do that in a couple weeks. I feel like that'll be fun.
I think so. Yeah. I need to do one more playthrough because I am 3 achievements short of having them all. And I'm like, I should just finish it. You know? They're not even necessarily hard ones. It's just, you can't really.
Ones you can't do everything in one.
No.
Or 2.
Or 3. I've done 3 playthroughs and haven't done them all. But now I have to do ones where it's like, you have to do specific things. Mm-hmm. Like I haven't killed the toll collector without her doing her gold in Act 2.
Oh, yeah.
The gold lady. So I just need to do that and save scum, figure out how to do it. It's just like stuff like that.
Yeah.
Stuff that will take multiple tries that you can't do on an honor mode run. But we'll talk about it when we do that at some point in the near future. I do think that our game discussions have more to talk about, especially since we're playing, well, we will do 2 RPG games. Those tend to have a lot more to talk about, which is good.
Yeah.
So look forward to that in the near future. Other than that, I think that's it. Bye. Thanks, well.